We did have a little bit of trouble with technology in the first bit. I would ask you to follow the plan that we had for the workshop when it's time for you to have your discussions. Please do email your responses as we had intended you to do. If the technology starts to cooperate, we will post them this afternoon. If not, we will still have them collected. They'll go on the website later, and they will be printed tomorrow and distributed during the second day of proceedings as intended. So we'll play along and hope that the technology plays along with us for the rest of the afternoon. So I will turn it over to Paul to introduce our second term.
Thank you, Lee. Our two presenters on people are Lynn McAlpine and Susan Cake. Lynn is a social scientist who became an academic after working professionally for 20 years. She began researching the experiences of early career researchers in the mid-noughts as a result of discussions with individuals in her research team about what they were learning and sometimes not learning about academic work during their PhDs, as well as how they were navigating career decisions at the end of their degrees. This led to a research program in which she and a team in Canada and the UK have followed a relatively large number of people for as long as 7 years as they develop their post-degree careers. She finds this work fascinating and feels privileged that so many are prepared to reveal their stories to her and her colleagues. Susan Cake is a PhD student in sociology at the University of Alberta. She completed her undergraduate and master's degree in Ontario at Western and at York University, respectively. Susan's research focuses broadly on the Canadian labor movement. Her research projects have examined the role of images in creating a visual imaginary of unions and the role of narratives in union renewal efforts. Susan has also been heavily involved in student leadership throughout her post-secondary career, most recently serving as the Vice President External for the University of Alberta's Graduate Students Association and as a student advisor in the development of professional and career development services at her university. I'll turn it over to Lynn and Susan.
Hello, everyone. I'm so thankful to be here and thankful to be speaking as well. Unfortunately, a lot of what I'm about to say has already been said. So I would like to associate myself with all the things that were said by the graduate students this morning, and a lot of it is just a reiteration. And if there was an exam, I would you know, tell you that if it's repeated, it's probably important. So I'm going to repeat much of what they said. So we're going to be talking about general themes under the heading of people. So the first theme that Lynn and I thought was important to talk about was this idea of agency. And by when we mean agency, we mean it under a couple different ways. But for our purposes, we really were looking at agency for people who are in PhD programs. And it opens up... Yeah, technology worked. So it opens up a lot of different conversations, though, when you start from a basis of agency and think about how our programs allow it, support it, and reflect agency. Our ultimate question that we kept coming down to was, how can we support individuals to have a sense of purpose and control in their decision-making while they are in a PhD program? And one of the ways that we thought that we could accomplish this was how we situate the PhD program in someone's life or in their career. And I appreciate thinking of it as a step towards what can be considered a wide range of opportunities and futures that we have not even yet to imagine. And this can include academia and also the not-so-obvious non-academic jobs, and as well, something that I think has been left a little bit out of the conversation is when people choose to leave a PhD program and not complete. And so they may see their PhD program in whatever stage they ended at as a step towards their future career and their future goals, and that decision to end is also an act of agency. So one of the other things that we were thinking about was how people in a PhD program are often conceived of as students. So this is so ingrained that it is very, very difficult to talk about people in a PhD program without saying students. And if I say it myself, I apologize. But the normative idea of what a student is at times lends itself to an understanding of a passive recipient of either a pedagogy or an institutionalization of some sort, where I think people in the PhD program may benefit, and the PhD program itself may benefit, if we look to Europe and how some of the people in the programs there are conceived of as junior researchers. And so I would suggest, what well, we would suggest as well, of if we considered our PhD applicants as either staff or junior researchers, would this change how we prepare them, and would it change the programs that we offer them? So that's just one aspect. And as well, I'm sure you all have amazing eyesight and can see this website that we put up here, but it's a website about students essentially arguing for humanities. So agency is something that we can think across all aspects of a variety of disciplines. But the student humanities website that we have on here is specific to humanities. And in my opinion, I think that this website, where essentially it's students talking about the importance of humanities, how they are the new generation in humanities, for me it really showcases how humanities is in a very unique position to offer agency and celebrate it in different ways. And I think that that is what makes arts and humanities unique compared to other disciplines in the university. So hopefully, we'll put the website available if you need it later. One of the other themes that was covered very much by the students this morning was this idea of diversity. And when I say diversity, I mean it in the broadest sense. And so the first way of looking at it I'd like to suggest is the people coming into our programs are an ever-growing diverse population. And in age, gender, race, ethnicity, their previous backgrounds, their family status, socioeconomic background as well. And we have this growing diversity. And as many of the students said before, we also have a growing diversity in sites of learning, teaching, and research. So we have seen a lot more demand from the students for some sort of public humanities, and a growing recognition of how what is being offered as teaching and research is essentially becoming more diverse. And what do we do with this diversity? And with all the changes in technologies, it's kind of hard to keep what we have done as a gold standard when the world around us is changing as well. So it's still challenging for programs and at times people to adapt to this diversity, but I would challenge you to consider, how can our programs build from diversity? And if we were to consider all of the people that come to our programs, would we design programs differently for them? And if we were to design programs differently for, say, someone who's coming to a PhD after they had a career and they're retired, versus someone who's coming and wants to go into government or wants to become a lawyer afterwards, would we design their programs differently? And if we would, do we currently have programs that can adapt to that diversity and somehow embrace it or support it? And is that something that we want to do? And one of the last themes that I'm going to touch on before Lynn comes in is the supervisor relationship. Okay, so the relationship is it's fundamental to the PhD program, but it's largely defined by the academic programs. In this I mean, who gets to be a supervisor, when a supervisor is selected, how they're selected. This is often outlined already before people get to the program. And the program structures the roles that supervisors take. So we can think of some of the obvious things, such as mentor or examiner. And by comparison, we can look to the UK and see examples where a supervisor is not necessarily an examiner, but that they don't actually sit as an examiner on comprehensive exams or proposals for dissertations and that. And is this perhaps a model that we would look at? And the additional role that's being talked about often is career advisor. So we would not argue necessarily that the dissertation supervisor is the best person to be a career advisor, but we would say that there is an institutional responsibility to encourage people to explore career possibilities at all stages in the degree. And we may even think of this at the application stage as well. And it must be done in an atmosphere of respect. You've heard this over and over again, but I do think it needs to be said again, that many students are concerned with discussing this with their supervisors. Whether or not their supervisors support them, if there's other people in their department that don't, they get the message that it's not acceptable to go into other fields. And they do worry that if they say they are interested in going to something beyond academia, that funding opportunities, research, and teaching opportunities will be given to the students who are considered more serious about academia. So considering all this, We encourage people to examine this relationship, what it should look like, and if we can think of it as something else than it already is.
Thanks. So continuing on that idea of what could supervision be, I'd like to propose the idea, or we'd like to propose the idea, that we should be really thinking about collective and not individual supervision. So that the supervisor is just the stand-in, the most prominent person in the view we're proposing of supervision. So it's really moving from this individual to a more collective view. And this isn't only good for the student, it's also good for new supervisors. New supervisors in our research feel overwhelmed personally with the responsibility they have for supporting students when they haven't yet learned what supervision is about. So it's a collective of people who are all pulling in the right direction, hopefully with the student very active. And so there's one sort of broader group of people that you can imagine, which are the ones, I don't know if you can read that, student, supervisor, committee, program director, senior, and peer academics. But if we accept it as a collective notion, then we have to think of an institutional collective notion. And some of these ideas came up this morning. Like, how do teaching development centers and writing development centers and career services and counseling services, how do those all share this supervisory responsibility for creating the kind of environment that junior researchers can be successful in? I want last, before we go to our questions, to talk about career paths. And we heard a lot about career paths this morning, and Anne helped us think about that quite a bit. And as we have talked about already, we've tended, not just in the humanities but elsewhere, to think of career paths as relatively limited within the kind of academic environment. But really what we're saying is, and I think what we've heard throughout this discussion today, is we really have to be exploring all the possible career paths that are available to people, so that if they choose academia, it's with their eyes wide open about what the other potential possibilities are, because we know those who go outside of academia often are happier than those within academia. And that's there's a series of international studies that would suggest that. So here's some examples of positions that humanists with PhDs have found themselves in. So radio, TV archivist, freelance writer, research council officer, foreign service, technical writer in transportation, policy campaign work, NGO archaeologist, associate editor for a magazine or publisher. So just a range of different kinds of interesting possibilities. We're also suggesting to you these two websites. They're very interesting. They're for humanists. They include humanists outside of academia talking about the kind of work they do, beyondthephd.co.uk and phdsatwork.com. Overall, what we would be arguing is that we have to really imagine that post-PhD trajectories are built from the very beginning of the PhD, so that we have to be junior researchers and the rest of the supervision team actively thinking about how is this PhD providing the basis for moving forward. So with that, we're going to, and we weren't very good about following instructions. We're like the other group. We ended up with three questions. What we really wanted to do was we want you to think about how can we create different models of the PhD if we're attentive to the ways in which the world today is changing and we're trying to guess what the world tomorrow will be like. So we've got to not just plan for today, but for a changing world, and also to consider how can we be more attentive to junior researcher agency in this process. So these are three questions. We'd like you just to choose one. What might admissions processes be like if we were attentive to diversity of applicants, trying to build up the diversity and ensure that? And if we were paying attention very early on to career goals and helping people think about their career goals. Can you read that? Should I say it again? Okay. What might your admissions processes be like if we were attentive to ensuring a diversity of applicants, and we were attentive to the fact that we want people early on to be thinking about career paths? Okay. The second set of questions, a whole bunch. But the big one is, what might supervision look like if we embraced a collective vision with the PhD junior researcher having an agentive role in this vision of supervision? So, for instance, how can we as more senior researchers learn from junior researchers who are digital natives? Like, I learn a lot from my, you know, the people I'm working with, but do we see it as a reciprocal relationship? How are we taking advantage of that reciprocity? What would happen if the supervisor did not have a role as an examiner in the PhD progression? As Susan said, that happens in the UK. So the supervisor's role is only to support the student, not to assess them. Or how might university support structures be made more accessible and more useful so that it's easy for students and new supervisors and experienced supervisors to connect with counseling, careers, etc.? And our third is, what could program structures look like in a highly connected world? We're still building on a model that comes from medieval times, practically. So what role might being physical, that is, being face-to-face like this, play in PhD programs when technologies connect us virtually to everyone in the world and we choose where we want to do the work we do? And what program structures would ensure active engagement with the world beyond the academy? So those are three big questions, and we'd like you to choose just one and think about it.
Thank you very much.